Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
The truth is that we always want to show understanding with government because we know we are essential workers. And so when we see them make effort to address issues, most of the time we don't necessarily have to wait.
The Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors suspends its strike action.
The outcome of the investigation of this committee will not actually change the electoral result, you know, as things will stand as it is.
Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio establishes a national committee to review the country's election process.
Two functions don't sit and all of us, common sense reaches us. We are in deep trouble and we have to sit down and cool down first. We discuss all the issues.
And the Committee of Elders of the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, expresses disappointment over the public dispute by the top leaders of the group. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors has suspended its strike action. Members of the group returned to work on Saturday at 8 a.m. The decision, the association president, Dr. Innocent Orji, says, will allow the government to continue to address its concerns and meet its demands. It followed meetings representatives of the association had with the government and the president of the Senate. The government and the Senate, Orji says, promised to address the demands of the doctors, which members say are in some cases being addressed. The group recently embarked on a strike action to demand better working conditions due to what it says is the government's failure to negotiate salary increases and the payment of arrears owed to them. Dr. Innocent Orji tells me that the national executive of the doctors group has given the government 2 weeks to meet all of their demands and will review their next steps.
We had several meetings with the government side. We met at the presidential villa with representatives of the president. And after that very meeting, we were invited to the parliament. The president of the Senate and the leadership of the Senate also had meetings with us same day. And promised us that in the next 24 hours from then, that they are going to try to address some of the urgent demands that we made. And so based on that, we gave them the time. And yesterday morning, we saw evidence that they have started addressing some of the issues, you know, especially with regards to the Medical Residency Training Fund for 2023. And they have also started working on the secular and one-for-one replacement that we believe is what is needed.
Are you saying that members of the Resident Doctors Association are currently pleased with some of the initial steps the government and the lawmaking body have made so far to address your concerns and demands?
The truth is that we always want to show understanding with government because we know we are essential workers. And so when we see them make effort to address issues, most of the time we don't necessarily have to wait until the completion of the resolution, because if we begin to do that, we may have to be on this strike for a long time, and we are considering the public. But unfortunately, this is actually what has happened in the past, that we see them move into action, they appeal to us, Nigerians appeal to us, we come back to work and give time for them to resolve the issue. But usually when we come back, everybody goes to sleep until the next industrial action. And so we are hoping that this is not going to be the case this time around. Our members have shown understanding. Yes, as of yesterday, we saw that they have started working on the urgent demands. And they promised us that in the next 2 weeks or less than that, we are going to see palpable results.
With assurances given so far, are you going to give the government a period of time to resolve these concerns within the next 2 weeks, upon which your members will decide the next line of action if the demands are not fully met?
That is correct. Part of the resolution we made yesterday was to give 2 weeks for us to see palpable results, you know, in all those issues, especially with regards to the secular and one-for-one replacement, because we keep mentioning this. Everybody knows that our hospitals are depleted of doctors and clinical staff. And so it is incumbent on government to bring out a policy that will enable the leadership of those hospitals to quickly replace people, because Nigerians are dying because of this inadequacy in numbers. And so it's even surprising that we are the ones pushing for this. Government should be able to know what is happening and then make effort to ensure that the right number of doctors and nurses are in our hospitals. Because we have people who are still outside the system. And the fact that they are not being employed is also making them to pack their bags and leave the country. We are hoping that Nigerians will now also come in and help us make these demands and ensure that government plays its own part so that in the next 2 weeks, we won't have costs to begin to have this industrial disharmony again.
So are you calling on Nigerians to put pressure on the government to meet your demand so you wouldn't embark on yet another strike that you resumed from recently?
The truth is that for people who understand what we are talking about, they know that this demand is for Nigerians. If the health sector collapses, the politicians will always have their way of going outside to take care of their health needs. It is all Nigerians like us that access these hospitals. And so if we all sit by and allow it to collapse, it's going to affect everybody. And we are making this call again. Nigerians should not even allow their doctors to go on. What they see us talking about something like this, it is incumbent on them to begin to make these demands of government. We have said it in the past. If we see Nigerians fighting for the survival of the health sector, I can tell you that doctors will not have any reason to down tools. We will be in hospitals working for them while we see them, champion this cause, this fight.
Dr. Innocent Orji is the president of the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Sierra Leone, President Julius Maada Bio has announced plans to establish a national committee to review and make recommendations about the country's election process. The committee, the president said, will be led by Vice President Mohamed Jallow. Members will include civil society and development partners. It follows the recent elections, which the opposition contends were fraught with voter irregularities and a lack of transparency. The president chose the vice president, he said, due to his expertise and people's management skills. For analysis and the latest developments, I reach Abdul Fatoma. He is the executive director for Campaign for Human Rights and Development International.
I mean, it actually comes with a mixed feeling. It depends on who you talk to. But like supporters of the ruling party are not actually complaining about such. But citizens and opposition supporters are not seeing it like anything that actually mean business. And
what is their major concern?
But the major concern is that how can you be the referee for the match that you partake in? And then the utterance of the president during the announcement that, the outcome of the investigation of this committee will not actually change the electoral result, things will stand as it is. But then again, Peter, if you go down a bit, since we returned back to multi-party democracy in 1996, 2002, we are not having a problem. In 2007, we were having a problem with the outcome of our election. In 2007, 2012, 2018, we're having issues with the outcome of our election. And this included 2023, right? And the Electoral Commission has always been the institutions that engage, local partners and other EMBs and international partners on electoral cycle reform that will lead to electoral legal reforms. The recommendations coming from the local and international observers, these are the recommendations that the Electoral Commission will look into and then develop their electoral cycle strategic plan document for the next electoral calendar.
But Abdul, some people are suggesting that the vice president is an expert when it comes to elections. He worked for the UN as an elections expert. So why shouldn't he bring his expertise to Sierra Leone to bolster the election process to ensure transparency and credibility in the future? Some people are suggesting that he is not the only person on that committee. The committee also involves civil society groups, the groups in the country. So their concerns, they said, are very minimal. Your take?
Peter, you are lucky you have set eyes on the list of people who are part of such committee. And I'm yet, as a Sierra Leonean, to know who and who are part of such committee, and I only understand that the vice president. Yes, he might be having that experience. He might be having such, you know, skills to help the government of Sierra Leone. But then you start asking. He is not a new vice president. This is his second term. And we were having an electoral reform back in 2021, 2022, and he would have opted as well to bring those skills on board. And now that, you know, he's eager, people are raising that concern that he has such, you know, a wealth of experience. I think he could, that's why I have the Electoral Commission. Then, you know, the investigations that they said they want to constitute and look into this issue and tell us what. Why not then invest in that resources, that energy, or those suggestions to the Electoral Commission that works with its local partners and also international partners to always build up strategic plan development, and with that, the Electoral Commission always work with political parties when it comes to electoral reforms. So for the vice president really to lead that call, it comprises of civil society, just the composition and the lead of it, it actually brings questions, because, I mean, we are talking about elections that have been won by the vice president and the president and their political party, that, you know, the opposition having issues with credibility, and some other international, you know, observers like the Qatar Foundations, the EU, and several others with some local civil society organizations.
Abdul Fatoma is the Executive Director for Campaign for Human Rights and Development International. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
In Uganda, the Committee of Elders of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, has expressed disappointment over the public dispute by top leaders of the group. The elders say the ongoing dispute should be handled internally instead of by factions holding competing press conferences. They presented a report which criticized FDC founder Dr. Chisa Besigye for public allegations that two leaders of the party failed to account for funds. Patrick Oboy Amuriat, the leader of the FDC, and Nandala Mapfabi, the general secretary of the group, have both denied the charge. Supporters say the public dispute, if not immediately resolved, would cripple and subsequently splinter the party. John Kikoyongo is the deputy spokesperson for the FDC. He tells me that concerns of the elders' committee are legitimate.
Anybody, I'm sure, who is a supporter of FDC must appreciate what the elders are saying, because the people themselves, the members of the National Council, who are more than 200 then, when these issues cropped up, they agreed and decided that they should take it to the elders committee. But those issues were maybe supposed to be private and only discussed with the elders who can listen to them and advise accordingly. So the mere fact that people who over FDC, members who are leaders, decided that we should take them to elders, it showed that they're not supposed to be discussed in the open. Unfortunately, it leaked into the open, and everybody has been discussing it in the open.
John, some supporters of the party are expressing worry that if care is not taken with the divisions they are seeing, the FDC could splinter and form different groups, because there appears to be two centers of powers at the moment, and each side is saying they are right, and that, they said, could cause problems within the FDC.
And that's a fact. It's not something you can debate, because if two factions don't sit and all of us common sense reach us, we are in deep trouble, and we have to sit down and cool down first. We discuss all the issues, and then we look at our aim of forming the party. We didn't form it to go into discussion of two people who had some serious differences, and there are some big allegations. Which allegations, if they are, which side believes their side is right? So someone had to come in between to look into the issues and advise accordingly. Unfortunately, even those people who sat, the elders, one of the groups don't believe what they wrote in a report is the right thing. So we still have that problem of each side not moving at all. I think we should move a little to the center. Oh, with the people who are supporters of FDC and members of FDC, we should look at something which is more beneficial to us and put this one aside as we handle other things. If this one, the truth comes after some time, whichever side thinks is right, or whichever side thinks now it is time to work together as a party, if we don't work together, the party will be weaker. There's no question about it.
Some are blaming the NRM and by extension President Museveni for sowing this kind of doubt in the minds of people and creating confusion within the FDC. Others are saying the FDC should own up to its own internal problems and resolve its issue, because Uganda needs FDC as part of a formidable opposition to act as a check and balances. Where do you stand?
The problem now is the most difficult job to do is being the spokesperson of FDC now. Because if you try to tell the truth and the other group does not believe in that truth, they brand you that you are on the other side. If you say something which does not favor this side, the other side will also you are on the other side. But the fact of the matter is, this is a very simple issue, I think, to solve internally. Either you find out the money came in or not. Even if it came in, did this spoil the party completely? The answer as we stand now, it is no. Now, how do you handle it as people who are? Even if they say President Museveni wants to buy off the party, you, the members of the party, you have to work harder so that he doesn't take it. It's not the first time that they wanted FDC to go down, but you have fought. Remember when General Muntu went away? He went away with more than 25 MPs out of 34. But we stood our ground, we worked hard, and then we continued with our party. This party was deeply rooted in the minds of the people across the country. So if we members of FDC decided that let's first leave this issue aside as they're investigating it, we continue with our work. If it is solved and found the money was brought, the one who brought it, then you should go to the disciplinary committee. If they find out the money was not brought, the one who alleged should come and apologize maybe and say maybe I was misled, something like that, and we continue.
John Kikoyongo is the deputy spokesperson for the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Zambia, the leader of the opposition Socialist Party has filed a court petition to seek legal redress. This after accusing the Inspector General of Police, Raphael Musumba, for defamation. It comes after Fred Membe was released after he was detained by the police. The police had accused him of inciting civil disobedience against the government, an accusation he denies. His party, however, says his arrest appears to be an attempt to intimidate and harass Membe for his sharp criticism of the government. To learn more about the defamation suit, I reached Socialist Party spokesperson Frank Bwalia.
The Deputy Inspector General of Police is the one who is complaining, causing the arrest of our president over a matter that should ordinarily be civil. That being the case, we see the need to have legal redress because it is not in order. It's against the law. This is a clear political battle, and they want to use the Deputy Inspector of Police to clamp down on our leader, to clamp down on the opposition and send a strong signal to all Zambians that they have a ruthless regime that will not tolerate divergent views.
But the police officer was just doing his job by stating what charges or what allegations the leader of the Socialist Party is facing. What is wrong with that?
There is everything wrong about this because the charges are flimsy. And since we have decided not to throw stones, not to do something that is illegal, we have decided to go through the legal process. It also puts us on a pedestal of people who are not doing anything wrong at all. But taking advantage of the law, taking advantage of the provisions of the Constitution to ensure that we get justice.
But the police are of the opinion that Dr. Membe has been inciting the public for civil disobedience. Isn't part of the criticism that the leader of your party has been leveling against the current administration?
If they are accusing him of inciting the people, of publishing information that would endanger public safety, the security of the country, then they should have charged him accordingly. What they have charged him with, the first case, is criminal defamation of a public officer. And it involves a matter where a police officer was unfairly retired and removed from the payroll before he could get his retirement package. In an effort to try to get himself back on the payroll, he was denied, he got depressed and died. What has that got to do with state security or inciting the people? The second one is where our president, with all his vast knowledge and superior knowledge about military practices and etiquette, criticized the decision to try to change the chairmanship of the CJOCC. This is a committee of all security wings and relevant institutions concerning maintaining internal security. It's like an ad hoc committee that you have even in America and in many places. And traditionally, the chairmanship or the chairmanship of this committee has been with the army commander. But the current government, out of what we believe was just a mistake, decided to move the chairmanship to the chief of intelligence. And our president criticized that decision. So it's an administrative issue. What has that got to do with inciting the Zambian people?
The leader of your party has been released. And the criticism against your leader is that he has always been voicing concerns, calling on people to rise up against the government. Now, that is tantamount to, as some people explain, tantamount to causing disobedience, tension, tribal sentiment to resent some sections of the country. His critics are saying this is unacceptable.
If our leader was guilty of what you just said, even as we speak now, he would have been behind bars. Those in government, the UPND and the president, would have been celebrating, because then they were going to have a prima facie case against him, and the Zambian people would not have turned up in their multitudes to come and support him if he had committed that offense. He didn't commit that offense of inciting the people, trying to make the government rise against the constitutionally constituted government. He never, and that's why they've not charged him with that offense. Those alleged offenses are in the statement of the Inspector General of Police.
Frank Bwalya is the spokesperson for the Socialist Party. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Malawi, the United Transformation Party, or UTM, says Vice President Saulos Chilima's silence is part of a strategic political decision. This after some members of the party expressed concern that the vice president, who is also the leader of the party, has not made a public appearance in some time. They cited instances where President Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, and other opposition parties met their supporters and in some instances were even campaigning. The UTM and the MCP formed an alliance to win the last presidential election. Analysts say the vice president appears to have withdrawn from public view due to charges of corruption facing him, an assertion the UTM denies. For more reaction to the vice president's apparent decision to stay silent, I reach Felix Njawala. He is the spokesperson for the UTM.
As a political party, we believe that we cannot campaign for 5 years. After elections, it's time to work, and we cannot be working whilst campaigning. And because of that, as a party, we just watching
but what's
happening.
Why are you saying so when people are saying the president has been campaigning, although he's also working as president of the country?
Yes, but we don't belong to the president's party. We have different parties. So we don't know their strategy. We have our own strategy. So I cannot respond on their behalf. But in as far as UTM is concerned, we have a strategy that we are following. And we cannot be shaken by what other political parties are doing. For your information, we don't need 5 years to campaign. We don't need 3 years to campaign. We don't even need 2 years to campaign. We campaign for 8 months, and we are months to vote close to political parties that have been campaigning for the past 30 years, the past 25 years. So we have our own strategy. We have our own communication strategy, and we know how to get our message to the voters. So, yes, for now, we are monitoring what's happening, and we have to wait for time to implement our strategy.
But the speculation is that because the vice president is alleged to have been embroiled or engaged in various acts of corruption, that has really crippled him to even speak out, because now he lacks the moral authority to talk about the fight against corruption because he himself is tainted with the allegations of corruption against him.
That's not true. Just because there is an allegation, it doesn't mean that you are stopped from doing any political activity. It's just an allegation, and it's only the courts that can conclude that matter. But at the moment, he is not guilty until proven by the court of law. So that cannot be the issue. I want to assure you that when it's time for the president to be on a campaign trail, when it's time for him to start communicating to his supporters, it will happen, and nothing will stop it. But at the moment, it's outside our peripheral, where we just have to start doing things just because other political parties are doing.
Well, some people are saying that your party should extricate itself from the alliance you formed with the MCP that went into government, because supporters appear to have tensions in between the two groups. Is the party position to extricate itself and to campaign alone ahead of the next general election, or you will still stick with the MCP alliance to compete again?
Well, we have an agreement with the Malawi Congress Party, and this agreement is still in force, and we don't want to be a party that will exit the alliance and discontinue the agreement. We don't want to be that, a part to that. We are here, we have an agreement, and our supporters are clear about that. So we are quite observing what is happening, and at an appropriate time, a decision will be made. Yes, there are tensions. Yes, our supporters are not happy with the alliance. They want the party to exit the alliance, but that cannot be done out of emotions. That cannot just be done just because we are frustrated or supporters are frustrated. We have to make sure that everything we do as a political party, it's done according to what was discussed before the signing of the agreement. If the other party decide otherwise, then it is their problem. It is them that have breached the agreement. So as a political party, we are still in the alliance. Yes, there are so many issues. There are so many problems in the alliance. For your information, we only had a meeting in July 2022 to discuss about the alliance or to iron out some differences that are there so that UTM Party Manifesto can also be implemented during this period.
Felix Njawala is the spokesperson for the political party United Transformation Party. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. Ohaneze Indigbo, a group that seeks to represent all Igbo people worldwide, held its first town hall meeting at the Smithsonian National Museum of African Art in Washington, D.C. It was themed Securing Igbo Land Through Economic Empowerment and Development. The North American chapter of the group plans to help develop Igboland. The Igbo are an ethnic group mainly located in Nigeria, but also in parts of Cameroon, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, and beyond as migrants. Kingsley Obaji is a leading member of the Ohanazi Indigbo North American chapter. He is chief operating officer and founding partner at NIS Solutions, an information technology and program management services company in Sterling, Virginia. He talks to me about plans of Ohanazi in North America to launch development projects back home.
Well, we organize it here because in Washington, this is pretty much the center of things. And interestingly, it was done at the Smithsonian National Museum of African Art. We could not find a better place to do that because Ohanazi is about culture, social cultural organization.
One of the issues that have been raised about the Igbo nation is the lack or supposedly lack of unity among the people. Talk to me, what are the plans to change this narrative?
What we're trying to do here in the United States and the Americas is to look at how can we sensitize the Igbos in North America to unify them for a common purpose. And that purpose is that how can we put our energy, our resources together to help with the development of Igboland. We think the development of Igboland is going to a very great extent, be something that the Igbos in the diaspora have to contribute to very significantly, contribute to the development.
You've had a few challenges in Igboland, like Imo State, where there's a sit-down directive by some groups of young men and women making the people afraid, and sometimes people have lost their lives. I was reading somewhere this morning and people calling on Ohanazi to act because one immigrant in Finland is making orders and people are afraid because they can't work.
So we are advising the leadership to seriously look into the situation if they're looking to have economic development in Igboland. Our purpose here in North America is to look at how do we contribute towards the development of Igboland. Infrastructure development, industrialization, technology, healthcare, agriculture, and I can go on and on. Igbos are enterprising people. They are really hardworking people. Igbos are very innovative people. And you find Igbos all over the world. Igbos are always willing to take up challenges. Unfortunately, what's happening back home now is not what we want to see. Therefore, we want to engage ourselves. How do we contribute towards the economic development of Igboland? I think our first project is really to go into public-private partnership and get the port built in Igboland. Probably within the next couple of years, I probably would say within 2 years, we should have a port.
But that's a heavy investment. Do you have the resources to do that?
Well, you know, To build a seaport in Igboland will not take more than $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. State of the art. Mm-hmm. Technology, AI, logistical things and security and what have you. We have about 500,000 Igbos in the United States. And then you have people like Mr. McHenry that have traced their roots to Igboland. And they want to come back, they want to help with the development, investment. And of course, as a business person, you invest where you have a good return on your investment. We think the seaport is going to be a great one because the market is there. We have industries in places like Aba, places like Onitsha, Oweri, Port Harcourt. this seaport is going to take care of all the import, export, and logistical things that need to go on for the development of Eboland.
Kingsley Obaje is a leading member of the Ohanaeze Indigbo North American chapter. He is also a chief operating officer and founding partner at NIS Solutions. He spoke with me from here in Washington. It's the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In boxing, former unified heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua has delivered a seventh-round knockout of Robert Hellenius in their heavyweight affair, making it his first knockout win since he defeated Kubrat Pulev on Saturday. The win for Joshua meant he kept himself on track for a lucrative payday against American Deontay Wilder next year. Hellenius stepping in after Britain's Dillian White was ruled out of the non-title fight, but a dope test a week ago lasted longer than expected. The knockout victory was a sign of relief for Anthony Joshua since his 2019 stoppage defeat to Andy Ruiz and his back-to-back losses to Oleksandr Usyk, the former unified heavyweight champion.
Hellenius, I told him there, please come again. The guy's got some, he's got talent. So I had to figure him out. He was a late replacement. And I think he can cause a lot of people some problems, in my humble opinion. But I just said credit to him for coming out tonight and saving the show. I hope everyone enjoyed. I don't want to say too much.
In volleyball news, president of the Tunisian Volleyball Federation, Mohsen Ben Taleb, on Saturday announced the withdrawal of Tunisia's women's national volleyball team from the African Championship scheduled to be held in Cameroon from August 16th to the 25th. Ben Taleb said five players and the team doctor had tested positive for COVID-19, and in order to protect the health of the entire delegation, the Federation decided to withdraw the team from the championship. The Confederation of African Volleyball had announced the participation of 19 countries at the African Championship 2023. These include Tunisia, Egypt, Algeria, Burkina Faso, Burundi, Uganda, DR Congo, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Lesotho, Rwanda, Morocco, Mali, Nigeria, Tanzania, Zambia, Kenya, Senegal, and Cameroon. In athletics, World 800 meters record holder David Rudisha is among three ambassadors picked for this year's World Athletics Championships that will be held from August 19th to the 27th in Budapest, Hungary. The 34-year-old won two gold medals at the World Championships in 2011 in Daegu, South Korea, and 2015 in Beijing, China. He's also a two-time Olympic champion when he claimed the title in a world record mark of 1 minute 40.91 seconds in 2012 in London before retaining the title 4 years later in Rio, Brazil. In rugby news, South Africa national men rugby team, the Springboks, arrived France on Sunday as they began their World Cup defense. The team will face Wales in Cardiff on the 19th of August and the All Blacks in London the following Friday, the 25th of August, in their last two warm-up games before departing for a week-long training camp in Krosika en route to their tournament base in Toulon. The Bucks opened their World Cup campaign against Scotland in Marseille on Sunday, the 10th of September. Says the difference between the 2019 World Cup and this year's edition is that there is more expectations on the team now compared to 4 years back. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's 1 month's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As millions of Africans remain restless and waiting to determine which of the two groups, the junta and those opposed to the coup in Niger, will fire the first shot in the guns of August 2023, mindful of the disastrous effect of the August 1914 Guns of August. Nevertheless, we should look at some other developments in Africa last week that are worthy of attention. Two of these are in South Africa, and the other will be in Uganda. As you may recall, former President Jacob Zuma was the architect in South Africa for winning the admission to the charm group of the meeting in an economic group. As you are aware, the BRICS summit will be held in August in South Africa. But the government was aware of the looming embarrassment that the man who succeeded in winning South Africa's admission to the group would be locked up in jail while the summit continues. He just returned from Russia, Zuma, and it was no surprise that the largest opposition party, Democratic Alliance, was waiting to insist that he should be returned to jail. But another plan had been laid out by the government that prevented that scenario. Some time ago, the legislature passed a law that called on the president to tackle the problem of overcrowding in South African prisoners. And this may involve the release of non-violent prisoners. So when Jacob Zuma returned from Russia, on Thursday, he registered with the prison authorities to say he has returned and will go to prison, which had been demanded by the courts on the appeal of the Democratic Alliance. That was noted and he was incarcerated. But shortly afterwards, it was announced that the President of South Africa has released Jacob Zuma as one of the non-violent prisoners in the implementation of that legislature. Of course, it was understood that the Democratic Alliance and its supporters will fume, yes, but they could no longer seek a friendly court to demand the return of Zuma to prison. So now Jacob Zuma is a free man and will be able to participate in the forthcoming summit in Johannesburg. It is also possible, if he wishes, to attend mixed with his former colleagues, heads of state, and also heads of state that have been invited by the South African president as observers of this crucial summit. We next look at another matter in South Africa, one that is really an embarrassment to the U.S. ambassador in South Africa. You may recall that some time ago, the ambassador had with great confidence alleged that the South African government had concealed the sending of weapons and ammunition to Russia in a Russian vessel. He was damn sure that that was the case. Upon making that allegation, the president of South Africa established an investigation panel headed by a retired senior judge. Last week, the court submitted its report and declared that the allegation of the U.S. ambassador was false, that instead, Russia has delivered weapons to South Africa and in return had taken away some food. This allegation against South Africa was made at the time when the Western members supporting Ukraine were arguing that Russia was short of weapons and was looking around to find weapons to use in the war in Ukraine. A very, very serious charge indeed. Now that the report has been declared, that those in South Africa were saying the American ambassador must apologize to the government and people of South Africa and that he should depart from the shores of South Africa. But those who support the ambassador are saying that he should not apologize or leave, but ask to see the entire report on the investigation and demand to know on what basis that conclusion was reached. However, President Cyril Ramaphosa said that he would study the report and then would take appropriate action. Thank you.
That was Woman's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hi.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
You make me wanna rearrange the alphabet so I could put you next to letter I. Take my heart, baby, carry go. If you leave me, baby, I go die. Nekunda suni sisi kete kete. Okabra 43, na no ye risi risi. Nisi mojire smile si risi risi. Open you want some in no chili chili. Hey, me baby ni brownie, yeah. Golden tree chocolate, yeah. Me chatoli, yeah. Each and every day me a be the my own. That time of the chase and then no money day. My own. See my heart back push it up and they grind for my thing, yeah. My own. Like the air and the feel I'm for everywhere. For two. Me draw una wo draw me tibe fiebu. My own. That time of the chase and then no money day. My own. See my heart back push it up and they grind for my king. My own. Like the air and they feel I'm for everywhere and they go. My own. See the money baby come chop on for me. Ne tunne sunne sisi kete kete. Bro, foot it clean, I know you're risi risi. Nisi mojire smile, si risi risi. Up any one time, me no chili chili. Hey, me baby ni brownie, yeah. Golden tree chocolate, yeah. Me chatoli, yeah. Each and every day, me a bidi, yeah. My own. That time of the chase, I'm then no money day.
Song. want to let you know, man, I miss you bad. Where you cheat back, baby, make we cancel. Take off a cheat where you cheat, where I cheat, where you cheat back, baby, make we cancel. I don't feel like I did you wrong. That be why I sing this song. Loving you is all I want. I just want to let you know, man, I miss you back.
Our Sunday Music Spark. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here in the service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, you're now on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a grasshopper that sleeps about will soon be awake in a lizard's mouth. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.